Summer officially began last Friday, so 'tis the season for Shakespeare theaters around the country, around the world, I suppose, to start taking their productions of William Shakespeare beyond the walls of their performance space. And even at Chesapeake Shakespeare, which has one of the most beautiful performance spaces I've ever been privileged enough to perform on, they take their Shakespeare plays out into the streets and environs and parks of Baltimore, Maryland, and beyond. Ian Galliner is the founding artistic director of Chesapeake Shakespeare. And Ian, I just wanted to say, first of all, that I love your logo for Shakespeare Beyond.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Yeah.
It seems to promise Shakespeare and vaudeville. Is that conscious on your part?
100%. It's, you know, to sort of get that fear of Shakespeare out of the way.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Austin Titchener, co-artistic director of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, now in its 19th year, number 968, Shakespeare Goes Beyond. It's always a blast talking to Ian Galliner, the founding artistic director of Chesapeake Shakespeare Company in Baltimore, Maryland. This summer, their Shakespeare Beyond program is taking Ian's highly localized but still mostly Shakespeare adaptation, It's the Comedy of Errors, Hun, to parks and outdoor venues all over Maryland. We started our conversation by talking about one of the best things about performing outside for sometimes unsuspecting audiences. If you're taking it into parks, you are frequently drawing audiences that maybe don't know you're there and sort of discover you. And what I love about performing for families and young people is that the young people frequently don't know, wait, this is something I'm supposed to hate. Somehow that it gets inculcated as we age. So they're a fantastic audience. And I love that reminder for you. What sort of audiences do you draw for Shakespeare and Beyond?
We draw all sorts of folks, which is my favorite audience of all. You know, the program is especially designed to go into communities, not exclusively, but especially to go into communities that don't have as much access to arts and culture. Actually, my favorite audiences are the ones that are not planning to come see us and just go, what's that over there? Hey, let's go sit over there. And one of the favorite things that we do is, you know, if we see a family or something that's just coming by, we say, you know, we give them blankets and stuff, and we say, here, come join us, have a seat. You're welcome to it. Anything we can do for you.
Can you describe the van that your sort of your set, I'm in air quotes, because it's very appealing and I'm only seeing it on the pictures on your website.
Yeah, it's so cool. It's really cool. It's like, it's a combination. We call it the Shakespeare wagon, and it's a combination of a couple of things. Like, it's really old and new at the same time. It's, you know, rooted in the old pageant wagons that, you know, predate Shakespeare, and and certainly in the wagons that Shakespeare and his folks would take around England. But also, it's a bit of a transformer toy. It's like a big giant, and instead of, you know, becoming a robot or something, it becomes a stage. So we come in with this truck, and we, in an hour and a half, it's a stage with sound and lights, and you know, we have a big tent set up that there's like circus tents, so like that's also kind of friendly to people as well. And it's all in this, well, I don't know, is it a 23-foot truck? I think it's a 23-foot truck. It gets packed tight in there, and unpacked very carefully. But yeah, it's really cool, and it looks a little bit like the circus coming to town.
Yeah.
You know? As a matter of fact, we have on the wagon itself, we have like graphics of, I think we call them astonishing creatures, and then there's like a donkey head, and you know, that I think the Titania is on one of the graphics too. But you know, just kind of mixing that, you know, those two worlds up between entertainment and you know, and Shakespeare.
Well, I love that because Shakespeare also is both old and new.
Yeah.
And it's funny how you just said mixing entertainment with Shakespeare as if they are opposing things.
Oh, yeah, not
but
at
I
all.
Do. No, but I do the same thing because I write these articles for the Folger, and which I have described over the years as I write about the intersection of Shakespeare and popular culture. Well, Shakespeare is popular culture at its best, you know, so yeah. I sort of hate that false distinction. For 300 years, he was popular culture until sort of the 19th century, and then we transformed him badly and inappropriately. And so I just love the approach of Shakespeare Beyond.
It's really when I say that it's about outwardly how people interact with it. So, you know, what their reaction to, you know, Shakespeare in their community might mean.
Yeah. You mentioned that it looks like a circus. Do you travel with an army of clowns and roustabouts, or is it a small cast that does everything? How does that work?
It's mostly it's we have a crew too, but I mean, I guess you call them roustabouts.
That's what they're called. That's the circus term.
No, of course. Occasionally, my brain, I think of the word carny, but I don't think that's
roustabouts are slightly more appealing than carny. I'm sure your crew has all their teeth. That's my guess.
Yeah. Well. But there's nothing wrong with toothless performers. we go out with about 20 people.
Oh my gosh, that's a large company.
Yeah.
I wasn't thinking of asking this, but now I'm prompted to. Did you suffer from NEA cuts from under the current administration, and how are you dealing with that?
100%. We had an NEA grant for $50,000 specifically for this project, not for general operating, for this under the, I can't remember what program it is, but, and you know, we'd been awarded it, and we got a note like a lot of other folks one Friday afternoon saying, you know, that grant we've awarded to you, well, we changed our mind. And that was about 2 weeks before we started our first rehearsal. So, you know, we'd spent money. Now $50,000 is a lot of money. It's, you know, not the total budget for the project, obviously.
Sure.
But the ways that, if I can be open about this, in the end, we sort of benefited from it in a weird sort of way. Here's what happened. I mean, our whole world doesn't benefit from it, but
right.
We sent out an SOS fundraiser, which we don't normally do. It's the first one I think we've done in our 23 years.
Right.
And within a week, we'd earned most of that, or raised most of that not all of it, but raised most of that $50,000. And then there's this private foundation, and I'm not going to mention their name because I think they kind of want to be left alone. But there's a private foundation that sent us a note on a Monday, a couple weeks after that, saying, "Here, there's some emergency grants. Fill out this quick application." And 5 days later, we were awarded the full $50,000 from a private foundation in New York City that didn't just do it for us; did it for other groups as well. I would say more important, like, you know, because stuff like this happens, you know, and it hurts,
yeah,
no doubt. But I think in the long run, the problem is that, you know, we didn't apply for future grants from the NEA because they asked us to endorse two policies, one of which had to do with, illegal DEI policies. Now, I'm like, first of all, we're not allowed to do anything illegal. So I don't know what you're talking about. So that one was kind of murky. But then the other one was about gender ideology. They didn't want us to promote gender ideology. And I'm like, what the hell is gender idea? I mean, I know what they want it to mean, but it doesn't mean anything at all. It's just nonsense words.
It means Elon Musk's hair plugs and face tightening, I think.
Yeah, precisely. So, but we decided, that legally we didn't think they were going to have much ground to stand on. And we've gotten that advice, but we just didn't want any of our community, our people to think that we were on board with any of that in any way.
Yeah. Good.
So we're out for the time being. We're out. We're not applying for any funding in the future because we just don't want to be associated with that in any way.
Yeah, no, I said good, but it's not good. It's horrible. Yeah. And I'm sorry that you and everybody are suffering and having to jump through all those hoops.
Hi, I'm Rachel Dratch, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This fall of 2025, we'll be touring all the great books abridged at various venues we'll announce soon, and the ultimate Christmas show abridged in Washington State at the Edmonds Center for the Arts on December 3rd and the Capitol Theater in Yakima on December 12th. Sign up for our newsletter or check out the touring page at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com, or our social media pages for venue and ticket information. Now back to my conversation with Ian Galliner, the founding artistic director of Chesapeake Shakespeare Company, whose Shakespeare Beyond is taking their mostly Shakespeare adaptation, It's the Comedy of Errors, hon, to parks and outdoor venues all over Maryland. Can we talk about the show that you're touring? Because I'm seeing the poster behind you. It's called It's the Comedy of Errors, hon, which... Yeah. Clearly tells me something that I love, that it's based on Shakespeare, but it's not exactly Shakespeare. It drives me crazy when I see productions of Twelfth Night, but it's a musical and we've added songs and changed the words and blah, blah, blah. I was like, well, then don't call it Twelfth Night.
Yeah.
Give it a new title. Can you talk to me about the production?
Yeah, sure. So I've spent my entire career saying we're not going to change a word. We'll cut words, but we're not going to add any words. Music, yeah, we'll add music, but let's keep to the text. And this one, I was like, no, I don't want to do any of that. Luckily, it's Comedy of Errors, so you know people aren't generally upset about changing the words to Comedy of Errors. So it's an adaptation. Hun is a word we use in Baltimore. Goes beyond Baltimore, but we embrace the term hon, as in short for honey. What can I do for you? Hon. But they pronounce it hon, not hon. Hon. A particular Baltimore accent with words like Timonium, which is a town called Timonium, which is nearby. Timonium is what it's called. And things like going down ashore, down the ocean. And it embraces all of that. So it's set in Baltimore, it's set in Maryland, but we also have a device where we've mixed up time periods. So it's not, you know, like Hairspray. It's not like 1962 Baltimore. Right. It's like, you know, Edgar Allan Poe's in it and Johnny Unitas is in it. And, there's a famous Maryland politician named William Donald Schaefer, who was mayor of Baltimore and governor of the state. And he appears as the Duke in the play. And we actually have a song in it that introduces that the play that says, yeah, it's not the song's called Shakespeare Didn't Write It. And we talk about how, well, Shakespeare wrote some of it. He wrote about 60% of it, and then the rest is all us. And I had so much fun doing that.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, it's just been a blast, and audiences are eating it up. I don't know if this is about everywhere, but Marylanders, especially Baltimoreans, are really fond of their and proud of their quirky corner of the world. You know, if you think of John Waters as kind of the ultimate in that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And I think audiences appreciate that this piece of live theater is speaking to me specifically. It's speaking to us, to this audience specifically. It's not transplanted across the ocean or set somewhere else. This is for us. And I think that sort of this is how stand-ups do it, right? They come in and they just make jokes about the people they're talking to, and we love it.
Yeah, I love to include where I am. I mean, not just the city, but the building or the
field, the park,
whatever it is, you know, that's part of the experience. So, you know, taking a show and moving it to some other area and not changing it at all, I wouldn't like to do that.
Yeah, now I'm thinking, oh, if it's set in Pittsburgh, it's Comedy of Errorsians.
Yeah, I don't know. Exactly. Now, I grew up outside of Pittsburgh for a while, so I know that accent.
Then you know.
My code for that is Yin's going downtown and said Pittsburgh Steelers.
Whoa, that's really good, Danton. That's really good. I had to practice that when we performed at the Public, that Danton. Wow. And I just finished watching The Pit, speaking of which.
Oh, I'm watching it now, too.
Yeah.
Except I don't do the accent at all. Which
no. It, and I don't think I've heard a single Yinz. Permanente Brothers, yes. Yeah. But nary a Yinz.
Right, a delivery from Permanente Brothers. That's
You must take Shakespeare beyond the walls of your theater in the off-season, in the other seasons, too, right? Do you have programs that go into schools, et cetera, or bring schools to you?
We do some. We bring them more to our space in the non-summer months. But we do school residencies. We don't tour at all in the off summer months, but we do bring in about 13,000 students a year. And we have the same program every year. Every spring, we do Romeo and Juliet. It's the same program. It's the same production, more or less, so that the teachers know what to expect. They know what to teach to.
Yeah.
And it's enormously successful. And like I said, we see over 13,000 folks a year, a spring. And a lot of these are Baltimore City kids who have never, not only Shakespeare, they've never seen a theater, live theater before.
Right.
And the reaction is stupendous. It's really incredible.
Well, and these,
I whenever I mention that, especially to people beyond Maryland, I have to give credit to Jeff Watkins in Atlanta Shakespeare, because we just copied his program. I went down there for a weekend once when we were building the building. I said, "What do you do?" And he was like, "Here's what we do." And I was like, "That's brilliant. I want to steal that." He's like, "Go ahead." So
that's amazing. Well, I mean, I do think it's incumbent upon all of us theater makers to train the next generation of patrons, audience members, supporters of live theater. There's plenty of actors, but by God, we need supporters and patrons. When people come to see you guys in the park, do they bring a meal? Is it just for the show? How long are you there? What all do you do out there?
Yeah, so they do bring meals, but we do more than just the show. We're in a park for a week sometime. Oh.
Wow.
And we have education tents that we put up during the day, and we provide education experiences for that neighborhood and that community. Wow. Usually they're like through summer camps, like in the area, or day camps and things. And then we say, bring your kids to us for a few hours, and we'll make masks and learn about, sword fighting and that kind of stuff.
That's incredible. Whereas a lot of outdoor Shakespeare companies, thinking of Independent Shakes in L.A., they have their one spot in L.A. But you are having these sit-down residencies in all these parks around Baltimore. That's incredible.
Yeah. And I should add that we're in the entire state of Maryland. We started here just in Baltimore, but Maryland's a small state, so it's not, it's not like going around Texas, but we go to the entire state of Maryland.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, except for one more thing, which I'll share with you in about 60 seconds, so stick around. Chesapeake Shakespeare Company's Shakespeare Beyond is touring It's the Comedy of Errors, Hun, to parks and outdoor venues all over Maryland this summer. Go to ChesapeakeShakespeare.com for more information. Then send us your Shakespeare circus skills via email to feedback@ReducedShakespeare.com or throw a comment to us over on the socials or on our own actual website, ReducedShakespeare.com, or visit my website, TheShakespeareans.com. Thanks, as always, to Always Going for the Juggler, Matthew Croak, web services by Ginger Power Limited, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Rhonda Wilson. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Rachel Dratch, who will also be touring all around New England this summer with Matt Walsh's Bluebird Improv. Go to their Instagram page, @BluebirdLegendaryImprov, for more information. And as always, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 968 2904ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you shouted out Jeff Watkins and Atlanta Shakes, and I will do the same because they are doing, I just found out, they're doing their own production of William Shakespeare's long-lost first play, Abridged.
Oh, great.
Which, one of my favorite performances ever is when we got to perform that on your stage, and I completely blew the Richard III's famous first line.
Oh, really? Well, we were awfully glad to have you perform it on our stage. We're proud to have you here, Austin.
This podcast is a production of the Reduce Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less. So much less.